Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, well, I know, first sad news, Seth Curry, Golden State Warriors, but they'll get through this series. But what about the next one? But, you know, I tell you, I look and I do things, and, you know, obviously I'm involved, and you guys all know how I feel about the Federal Reserve, worthless. But, you know, this recession talk is really starting to irritate me and piss me off, because the way I look at it is the middle class has never left the recession that they say they were out of, and they haven't felt the benefits of the so-called expansion, or whatever the hell you want to call the goofy names that these imbeciles put on it. And I find it troubling that we are bound to a bunch of idiot economists that continue to tell us that, well, everything's okay. Now, if you're working and you're making good money, then I'm sure everything's fine. But in most parts of the country, there are tons of struggles going on, and people aren't fine. And the middle class, as a rule, is not performing or doing as well as the rest of the country. You know, I mean, obviously entitled, their benefits keep going up because they've got Mr. Obama, you know, buying the votes. And of course, the rich, hell, they can take perfect advantage of this system. But what about the middle class? Why does nobody talk about what's going on in the middle class? I mean, I'm on air myself, you know, numerous times a week, and never once does it come up that the middle class is struggling. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, if I'm wrong, please shoot me an email, say you're wrong. I mean, because, you know, obviously it wouldn't be the first time that I was ever wrong. But from my perspective, from what I'm seeing, I see a lot of crappy jobs. I don't see much of anything. I certainly don't see growth. Where do they expect the growth to come from? Can we continue to have the free money Fed letting these corporations continue to buy back their stock and count it as earnings? You know, it's almost like our banking system that continues to loan money, and, you know, they get to create money out of thin air by, you know, lending out more than they have. You know, I'd like to do that too. I think that's a pretty good model. You know, I mean, let me lend out, you know, 9 or 10 times what I have, okay, and not have any exposure to it. Okay. And, you know that, well, hell, the American people will pay for my bill if I screw it up. Why is that accepted? Why do we accept it? Why isn't it an accepted practice? I mean, you know, when did banking become more valuable than the other business? I mean, I guess that's one of my questions is, you know, I mean, is it any more important than, you know, a manufacturer? I mean, but why do we accept it as if it were the gospel? I think that's a bigger question, because you only get money from banks when you don't need it or when it's plentiful, and they know that, you know, you're gonna get douched back anyways if you don't pay. So where do we benefit from what they're doing? Where is the benefit of when they bailed out General Motors and AIG? Okay. I mean, the debt model continues to grow. I mean, it's 4 years ago that the auto debt hit over $1 trillion and student debt hit over $1 trillion. So where is the big benefit of this phenomenal stock market that keeps going up every day. Okay. Now that is, you know, when we look back at history, and of course, you know, economists, they don't know their ass from their elbow, and they're going to continue to say, well, we'll evaluate it and, you know, we'll get back to you. Well, yeah, when they get back to me, it'll be too late, and they'll say, oh yeah, that was a bubble and we should have done something different. And that, I think, is one of the problems that I find, is that we can't admit that there's a problem. We have a group, they're doing a couple of things. Either they're just out and out stealing, okay, our money, or they can't figure it out. But you cannot tell me that you cannot see the issues in the overall global economy. Why the hell else is there negative rates everywhere? Why the hell else is there all these programs going on? Why is Obama getting involved in England's Brexit? So you can tell me all you want how good you've done for me, but where did you do for me? Okay? You bailed out the people that make money off of me. You bailed them out with money that I paid in to the tax system. So where did I, or where did we, benefit from the shit programs that you're doing? Okay? Where did we become the beneficiary? I mean, I don't know many people that, you know, the government says you're too big to fail, we're going to bail you out. I don't know many of those businesses. So where did we get the big benefit of this whole package? Let me see. We can't borrow money now because the banks won't lend it to us. We paid for the program through our taxes. We've got a horrible economy, okay, where everybody's struggling, okay? We have retail sales that continue to fall. We've got new home sales that continue to fall. But, oh, yeah, everything is great. And the economists tell you, oh, yeah, you're doing great. You know, the economy's in great shape. Maybe we'll increase rates again. No. I'm all for raising rates because I don't really care. I mean, I don't mind seeing a banking collapse. Weed out the crap. Why are we the ones that continue to bail them out? I mean, that's the bottom line. All they're doing is kiting our money, okay, from one to another. Okay, so where is it? Where is our benefit coming? Where does the average guy benefit from all the projects that are going on? And that is always my question and my issue is I don't see where. Obviously, I have guests on the program who, you know, Keynesian economic theory. I mean, you know, we've been beaten down for all these years of how good everybody is and how they do it and how they take care of us. But are they really? And the question is, no, they're not taking care of us. We're taking care of ourselves. They use our money to take care of everything. Okay? That's the end of the day. The people that can afford it the least are paying the most. And that, to me, is a crime in itself. Okay? I mean, you know, you've got a socialist in office now with another socialist running and one that's pretending to be like a socialist. So I don't know. I mean, you know, you can look at it any way you want, but I don't look at it. I mean, again, I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep taking care of my family, and I'm going to keep doing my thing. But, you know, as far as the general economy, I don't see the big benefit. But anyways, make sure you take the time to check out my friends over at Thinkorswim when they do their swim lessons every day at 3:30 Central. Kevin and Scott, they do a great job, and I think you should check it out. They talk about stocks, options, and futures and educate you on their platform as well. I think that you should check them out. I think also you should check out libertytalk.fm, where you can get a download of the Bubba Show every single day. And we keep talking about we're at 200,000 and we want to get to 3. I need your help. Make sure you start downloading them and listening and being part of it and emailing in and be mixed in with the audience. And for now, I'm going to step out here and take a break. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I will be back after the break. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Be right back. Wake up. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And of course, tomorrow, Fed Day, big action. Does the genius do anything? Is there a surprise coming out? I heard him yesterday. Muhammad Alarian said that he felt that the Fed was setting up for a rate hike in June. Is there any chance they step up tomorrow? Is there any chance they do something out of the unusual? I mean, they certainly aren't very bright when it comes to everything that they do. I mean, that we know. Again, I'll say it right to their face, so I really don't care. I mean, to me, it's like watching a bunch of idiots run around trying to figure out how to bail themselves out. But, so tomorrow, is there any chance of surprise? You know, I don't know. I think you could look, you know, I mean, certainly the way the bond market has been acting lately, certainly the way things are going, it looks like they could do something. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the real question is, you know, where are we going to fix the problems? When does whoever step up and say, hey, you know what? We got a lot of problems that need to be fixed, and there's only one way to do it. You know, when you're in business, you know, and many of you are entrepreneurs, you're in business for yourself, you can't depend on the wonderful government to come and bail you out. They're looking to put you in jail and steal what you got. But yet, you know, so, you know, one of the biggest problems is the debt load. Okay, this goes for farmers, this goes for businessmen, this goes for homeowners. You cannot carry too much debt, because if you can't pay it back, you lose. And this is one of the biggest fallacies that we have now in the whole system, is that the banks create their own debt. Okay, they put out money that they don't have. I mean, the run on the bank is if everybody came to get their money back at the same time, the banks would not have enough money to put it in to get it. And of course, they would call that a run on the bank, because they're lending out more than they take in. And this goes back in history based on the percentages. Now, we don't have that luxury, okay? But we can certainly have the benefit of usury rates. You know, I mean, it's interesting. We're getting all this peer-to-peer lending now. And now even PayPal's gotten into the game of lending money, and they're willing to lend you money on your daily sales. And you can pay back, and there's no interest. It's a fee-based loan. Interesting how they get around the law. Okay. It's a fee-based loan versus a interest rate loan. So you can pay back 10, 20, or 30% of your daily sales to go back to pay back your loan. And they will make you a loan based on your annual sales. Okay. And they will charge you a fee. Now, interestingly enough, their best deal, which is, let's say you borrow $15,000, okay, and you pay back 30% of your daily sales. So based on that number, your daily sales should be able to pay that back in 6.5 months, okay? They're going to charge you a fee of around $2,000 to borrow $15,000, okay? Now, if you annualize that out, okay, you're going to pay $4,000 a year approximately on a $15,000 note, okay? Those are usury rates, but they can get away with it because they're charging. It's a fee-based loan, not an interest rate loan. It's like the credit cards. A credit card sends you out that 0%, but you have to pay that fee to get it. And then if you don't pay, then you really get waxed. So, you know, again, where do we get the true equity? Where does everybody benefit in the deal? And that is always one of the issues that I find problem with. Okay, so, you know, if you walk it down, you know, you've got politicians fighting for what? Well, they're obviously fighting to keep their own money, and they're obviously fighting to build their own wealth. They could give a crap about you or me. I mean, I'm sure there's a few out there. I can't put every one of them in that thing. I do believe that Donald Trump actually cares, because he's got nothing else to care about. right? He's like on a cause. So I actually believe in his heart he does care and wants to do a good job as a president, as somebody who's not an establishment. But where did the establishment come from? Why did they become so powerful? I mean, certainly this is not what the founding fathers had in mind, to have this type of establishment. Now, again, granted, you know, we talk, you know, very proudly and happily about the founding fathers, and yes, they did a great job. But remember, when they wrote the Constitution, only the rich white were involved, right? Okay, so, you know, it wasn't like it was everybody involved. But at the end of it, you know, now you've got all the politicians, all they have is special interests. Okay, they're getting bought off by every special interest in the world. Okay, all to vote or to put legislation in the favor of who's paying them off. Now, that's too big a government. Okay, you know, big government was not what the original framers of the Constitution had in mind. Big government is a big waste of time, a big waste of money, a big waste of manpower, and it creates more garbage that doesn't work than it does good. Now, you know, should the states take over and have more power again? You know, does it make sense to have the delegate system? I mean, really, you know, I hate the term when they talk about, well, we should have a I can't even think of the term. I'm losing my mind. But a candidate, you know, a party candidate, someone who's in. It's like someone who's in with us. You can't run for president unless you're in with the in crowd, unless you're one of the crooks that is ripping off the American public. Okay, that's what you have to be. You have to be part of the in crowd. Okay, now, where did that become a necessity? But, of course, it's such a lousy setup anyways that who the hell would want it? And I think that that's one of the problems. But overall, you're looking at a system that is totally broken down, that is totally lost their mind, and spends so much more of the perpetual debt, and it keeps growing. Now, obviously, that's a good thing because they just keep printing more money, and you know they create money and more taxes, so that who gets to foot the bill? We do. You know, what's the theme today? Who's getting to pay the bill for the crap that everybody else pulls? Now, I don't know about you, but I wish I could win for president, because I'll tell you something. I mean, I'd do it for nothing. I would like to see the country that I read about as a kid, the country that I remember growing up as a kid, and not the garbage that I have now. I mean, we got imbeciles fighting, spending billions of dollars over what? Who can get the grayest first and have the most pressure on them? Okay, who's got the right to push the button? I mean, look at these yo-yos that are fighting. Okay, I mean, the crook, the hairdo, and you know, I don't know what Eddie Munster. Okay, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's not, the whole thing doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. To me, I think you've got a real problem that's being created overall. To me, I think you're putting yourself in a position of guaranteed failure. But we know that. And of course, they don't mind failure, because what does that mean? It means they'll get to do something and be able to scam more out of it. So think about it. If you think about the whole system, that one hand creates the problem, the other hand fixes it, and at the end of the day, they reach into your pocket and pay the damage. So how do you like it? How do you like me now, right? So are you happy with the system, the way it works? You know, does it work? I mean, obviously, we're the best in the world, okay? I don't want anybody to believe that. I don't believe that the United States is the best place in the world, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. However, it could be better, and it should be better. And we need to get away from this crap of, you know, which idiot are we going to vote for, and find somebody who could really go in and wants to really take care of America. Because that's what it's about, is really taking care of it and making me the American that I grew up as and the one I still want to be, because I love this country and I love it, you know, is the best ever. But in the end of the day, we need some work, and we have to get away from the thieves that are got our hands in our pockets. Anyways, you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm will get you all my downloads. I urge you to go there. I want you to follow me on Twitter at Bubba Average Joe, as well as go like the Bubba Show on Facebook. In the meantime, I'm going to step out here for a break and come back with my man Mike McClone. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for my man, Mike McClone. Mr. Fed, we got a Fed meeting, Mr. Fed. Welcome back, Mike. Always great to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we got the gang. Hail, the gang's all here. They get to meet on Wednesday. And I think there's some interesting action going on into that. Also, do you think they will do anything? There is no press conference this time, so they certainly wouldn't have to take any beat down if they do something. What's your thought of what they're going to do at this meeting?
Very unlikely they do anything, although since the market has taken off, they might mention a risk of excessive risk taking. They've done that in the past. They know they're a lot of the reason for this rally because they switched to a dovish stance. A lot of the reason the dollar has declined more is because of that switch to the dovish stance. So I think it's unlikely they'll do anything, and I think it's most notably they'll do nothing a little if the stock market, the NASDAQ, continues down. Like, it had a pretty bad week last week, but that was kind of unique thing about last week. Financials were up, and NASDAQ was straight down. But no, I think the Fed is unlikely to do anything at this meeting, and then we're walking into the election, so it's kind of a dicey period.
They're always dicey because they have no clue what they're doing. But, you know, that's, you and I are on opposite sides of that trade, which is cool. That's what makes a market, right? So, Mike, we got, you know, markets, they kind of seem kind of funky right now. And what I mean is that, you know, we had a monster rally off the bottom and, you know, just gargantuan, which is fine. It happens. That's nothing new in the old trading world. It always happens. And all of a sudden, we kind of came to a standstill right when we got approaching new highs. And I really thought, and it may still happen, that they were going to blow out new highs here and then sell off. Now, maybe we will, maybe we won't. But my theory is that the Fed keeps their dovish posture, and maybe we pop up to the new highs tomorrow, you know, or, you know, this week. And then I think maybe the market looks to take some profit. Any thought to that thesis?
Not sure. That's one thing that I like to leave to you is you're, I think, much better at hedging and timing and things, and I'm not. I try to focus more on the value, partly because I just realize I'm not good at those kind of things that you're good at, and that's your letting your hedging programs and stuff. So I don't really know. I'm kind of more looking at it from what to do to react. And one thing that's really happened last week is the commodity market's really taken off. Silver is now up almost 24% on the year, and that's, what, only 4 months? And we're pushing 5 months, 4 months. Crude oil has popped. It's up 17%, you know. And it looks like a lot of these commodities look like they have a lot of value, big picture value, compared to the stock market that does not look like it has value, are starting to pick up, and looks like the flows are heading that way, at least they have recently. We all know gold's, you know, up almost 17% year-to-date. So I don't really know what the stock market's going to do. I just don't see the value in investing at these levels. I still think the better thing would be it's underweight and look to overweight some of these other asset classes that have value. And one thing I was kind of concerned about last week was the bond market. The U.S. bond market seemed to kind of decline, and still up a lot in the year, as the commodity markets shifted out. Now, there's been some people like Jim Rickards and stuff has warned this. This might be the beginning of a, you know, maybe deflationary type thing, but that's still kind of a dream. So kind of curious how that pans out.
So, you know, again, and I wasn't asking you to pick direction, but you and I both know from your days on the floor and obviously my days on the floor that typically, like 18,000, when we got close, that was a given that it was going to go through 18,000. Whether or not it stayed there, we never know, but we knew it was going to print there, right? And I just think the new highs are going to print. I'm not calling for it as a trade. I'm just saying most likely when you get this close, the traders will somehow try to push it up in that direction. So now what do you say? I say to you, Mike McClone, the banks are massively short silver now, and they're getting willing to get shorter here. What do you say?
Well, you obviously have a better connection there than I do. I don't know if they're getting short. Sometimes, you know, they can force markets, but generally, an overweight short position will oftentimes be very good for position. I look at silver from a longer term fundamental supply demand standpoint, and the trends to me are just overwhelmingly in favor of higher prices. It's just a question of when. I can mention a few things like demand from India and China last year was record pace. Supply is declining rapidly, most notably because prices have declined. There's not a lot of recycling. Mining's even declining now. And there's a big pickup in demand, not only from countries like that, but for electronics. And we all know those aren't going away. So I don't know what the banks might be doing. I just look at the bigger picture. Here's the value. And it looks like technically it's bottom. Then I look at things like the S&P 500. Look at SPY. It kind of topped around 1280 last week. That could be a potential high. The Nasdaq looks really vulnerable. It's, you know, look at the Qs. The Qs topped out last week around 111. But financials have taken off. Well, you know, who knows how long that's going to last? I think this might be the churning period as we get near a high. But you look at charts like financials rallied, but they're still trending lower. The 50-week moving average is clearly trending lower. The 20-week moving average is clearly trending lower. You're supposed to be selling into this, I think, in terms of the equity market.
Right. And again, look, you look at things a little different than I do, and not as how we look at them, but you look at a much longer time frame. I like to talk in sometimes, you know, the trading lingo, you know, long term payout, but the gain could be 3 minutes for us, right? But as a prognosticator and as somebody who looks at the market and shares information with people, I look at like a daily chart, you know, over maybe a 3 month period or whatever. And I know you use weeks, and that would be the difference. So you're looking at a weekly chart saying, hey, this is a great spot for me to even get in here. And I look at it from a daily perspective and say, you know what? I don't necessarily mind it. I mean, I own it, but I would be a little concerned here from a daily perspective just because I would assume maybe some sort of a pullback. Would that be a correct assessment?
Yeah, and that's one thing. Your expertise, you're much better at the hedging in short term. And I've found that from my standpoint, I just can't do well there. It doesn't work for me. So I figure I go with what works for me. Next, I'm really a big fan of the weekly charts. To me, they oftentimes filter out a lot of the noise. I love the weekly 50-week moving averages, 100-week moving average. And I think it's the significance of the weekly trade that really matters. Notably, you have 2 days off in between. The psyche of most people works on a week, you know, working for the weekend. Everybody's working for Friday. Markets shut down. They're closed globally. And then they start back up on Monday. And to me, it's that weekly psychology that seems to work best for me, and I find it better to focus on longer terms. That's why I usually look at it from a weekly standpoint. But then again, that's, you know, your expertise is more in the hedging, and the dailies are, you know, you do well there.
Well, no, I mean, I just read the charts. I mean, again, obviously a chart is a chart. So let's talk about this for a minute, because this is important for everybody to understand. You know, you have a like I'll say a 50-day moving average, you'll say a 50-week. They're really the same thing, except that yours is your time is designated by weeks, so it's 50 weeks. Mine is by days, so it's 50 days. But so when somebody says to you, you know, you can have a 50, it really is a 50-period moving average, not day or week. It's the, however you're charting. If you're a weekly chartist, then each bar or each representation will be that of a moment in time. Mike likes the weekly. So what are the 50-day weekly moving average and the 100s looking like right now?
Yeah, I don't. The 50. Did you say 50 week?
You use a 50 week, right? 50 week and 50 and 100.
Yes, the 50 week. Like I'm looking at the financial ETFs. They look like they've turned down. They look at this S&Ps. They look like they've the 50s and the 100s look like they've the 100s still trading higher, but 50 and 20 week looks like they've trended down, and this area, I mean, I thought earlier, just we're supposed to be letting things go. It looks like markets have turned down, most markets. NASDAQ is, I would say, one of the most significant. It looks like it's turned down. And with things that really look like they've turned up are, finally, well, the VIX looks like it's turned back up. This is 50-week moving average. Silver looks like it's finally switching back. It's not there yet. TLT definitely has been trending higher. Silver's still trending down, so it's not turned yet, but I still, you know, to me, it's been the fundamental shift.
No, I agree. I mean, look, I like silver. I bought silver. I mean, listen, I've been a player of commodities. I'm on record as being so. So, again, I'm not, you know, I look at different things. I do read the charts, and that's one of the things I do to make a long-term call or perspective. But certainly, when things get to a certain price, and I'm not talking about stocks, because stocks, they got a problem. They could go out of business. But I know that silver's not going out of business, and I know that the grain market's not going out of business. So those I'm much more willing to commit to based on price versus anything else. I don't necessarily need, if silver, which it did in my opinion, got cheap enough, okay, I'm buying it anyways. When corn got cheap enough, I was buying it anyways. I didn't care what the technicals were. I'm buying it because I'm willing to hold it, knowing what my exposure is versus that. And, you know, again, so when I'm trading commodities, I'm not as worried as when I'm playing stocks, because my commodities, they're not going out of business, right? Unless, are we going to stop eating? Are we going to stop using, you know, silver? You know, I don't think so. So that's, to me, a different story. But so it is the way that we all look at it. And that is also an investor's view versus a trader's view. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. But one thing I was saying on a commodities panel this week, and I pointed out, I was at an ETF conference, is commodities will never go below zero, but an investment in a commodity can go to zero. And I'll give you one example. When I was running the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index at S&P, there's one index I had to rebase because it went to practically zero. That was the natural gas index. And that's because of contango. Now, natural gas went down, but not that much. So that's one difference thing I like to make, a key difference. If you look at year-to-date, silver is up, what, 23% or 24%?
Right, do me a favor, Mike. Do me one favor. Silver. Hold that thought. We're going to, because this is an important point. We're going to run up against a break. So hold that thought. We're going to actually re-explain from the beginning, because it is very important what you're saying right now. This is the Bubba Show. We are with my man, my friend, Mike McClone. Always here, a great analyst, has a great feel, and he actually builds a lot of his ETFs, and he builds the good ones, not the crooked ones. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you check out libertytalk.fm and get the download. Be one of the 200,000 people who get it. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break with Mike McClone.
10 miles from town, and I was proud.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, with my guy, my man, Mike McClone, ex-trader, analyst, pretty smart guy, guys, and again, longer-term view. Okay, so Mike, you're explaining about the natural gas and the contango and backwardation, which is something that can create problems, but typically, if you do understand that, it really is not a problem. It is a problem within an ETF, though, but it is not a problem within the actual raw commodity. Would you agree?
No, not the actual raw commodity, but that's the big difference for end user investors like us. Can't really invest in the raw commodity unless we want to pay for that storage, which is very expensive. So
correct.
I'll give you an example. You can buy a silver ETF that tracks the actual physical silver. You can do that in almost all the precious metals. You can, and you basically get that precious metal return, like silver, which is also industrial, less the expense ratio, and that's it. But if you want to buy something like natural gas or crude oil, you have to buy an ETF that tracks the futures. You have to use futures. And this futures will roll, and that could be something roll into what's called contango, where it has to roll every few months at a higher price. So let me give you an example. Year to date, the silver ETF is up it's like 23%, and the price of silver is up 23%. So it's actually about the same. That almost always happens. You look at spot crude oil. The front crude oil contract is up about 16-17% year to date, but the actual number one ETF that tracks crude oil, which is USO, is actually down in the year, down very slightly. And the reason for that is because crude oil has been in a steep contango and has to roll. Now, this is not an endorsement against or for anything. It's just to make sure you know what you're buying. So oftentimes when you buy commodities through an ETF that's not a precious metal, or an industrial metal for that, just be very careful, and sometimes it's better to be more tactical, meaning shorter term. If you want to hold a commodity for a long term, be careful what commodity it is, and if it's anything you can't really store easily, like if it's not a precious metal, be very careful how you do it, and make sure you watch that trade carefully, because oftentimes you're just better off being more tactical. For instance, corn. Corn, when it comes off the stalk, is a high moisture ratio, and it has to be reduced, it has to be dried, which farmers will say it has to run air through it. And so oftentimes corn will have a pretty steep contango. It costs more to invest in, to store, versus soybeans. Soybeans oftentimes when they're harvested, they're almost ready to send to the river. They almost have dry right away, so they generally don't have much of an expense or a contango. But that can shift. It's just something you have to be very careful with. And when you invest in precious metals, it almost never shifts. And one thing about industrial metals, it's generally not as much as a factor. Remember thinking copper. Copper is not too expensive to store.
No, right, and you're of course right. And the other thing is that USO, which is not performing well, is obviously if you want to be short that space, that's a great one to short because you get the benefit of it shrinking on its own without the markets going in your favor. But that is one of the things. And so, Mike, can they ever fix that? Is that something that can be worked on and be made better through these?
Yeah, well, that's one thing that has been. There's a lot of ETFs up there that are out there that are designed to help alleviate the contango. I think it's the USL or something. That'll invest in like the whole entire 12 front months, so it helps alleviate the contango, but you can't just get rid of it. Generally, it's hard to do that, but there's a lot of ETFs and indices, number one, that are designed to help alleviate those issues, and a lot of indexes that are designed to help alleviate it, and it just makes sure you always read the prospectus. But yeah, there is products out there. Just have to be careful what you buy and what you do. And again, it's what's your time frame. If you're short-term tactically, maybe less than a month, then it's not going to matter too much.
No, you're correct. So we've got, you know, a whole mess. So, Mike, is this the year that you sell in May and go away? I mean, to your credit, you made a call almost a year ago now? Maybe longer, I don't know, 5,000 on NASDAQ, and you felt that that would be a very key level and it would probably not hold, and it did not, and it's been really never back since. And, you know, is this the sell and may go away year, or is this just more of the same? I mean, I know obviously we can never... I mean, those are actually pretty silly predictions because, you know, people are looking at things over, you know, let's say 50 years. Unless you've made it to trade every year for 50 years, it really doesn't apply to you. So I hate when they do that. But I do see some pressure, and I know you've seen some pressure in the markets. And it's not that you care about the pressure, but you say you got to protect yourself. So I know you're still protecting and you want to buy things. But do you see some problems coming in this market and not rewarding the mediocrity of the lousy earnings anymore?
Yeah, definitely did and do. And, you know, at the end of last year, radar was pretty high. We had that massive correction. Here we are back right up again. So I think that's a high risk. But I look at it, you know, sometimes the market's going to make it as difficult as possible and cause the most pain. I just look at it more like it might do whatever. It's going to do whatever it wants, but I can't see the value. So that's the way I look at it. And sell them in May and go away very much might happen. Who knows what's going to make that happen? But there's the key things we talked about for a while, and that is declining retail sales. A lot of these signals that were out there, the commodity market going down and bond yields going down, a lot of these signs that were showing that the economy is not doing as well as it was supposed to in Fed tightening, still also in declining earnings, all indication that the stock market is just not, it's just doesn't have a lot of value. So I just look at it as there's just not a lot of value there, but there's a lot of value in some other things, most notably commodities. I still have a nice bias for gold and silver.
Of course, why not? Because again, you're going to hold them long term. But so, does it bother you as an analyst? Does it bother you as an investor? Does it bother you for any reason that in the stock market, because of the way we're functioning right now, that we reward companies that have crappy earnings, but better than what they were expecting, but the stocks explode because of that. Does mediocrity in this country bother you at all?
Well, one thing that I don't know really how to, there's a lot of things. One thing that really scares me is the stock buyback factor, where you're a manager in a firm, senior level, and oftentimes they're compensated to some extent based on the performance of the stock, and they're also the persons making the decisions whether to buy back stocks. And I remember buybacks were quite popular in 2006 and 2007, and I remember someone telling me, oh, there's just so much money flushing around, when I was really getting concerned about what was happening in the markets and the housing market and how the VIX got too low for too long. And you've heard it before, and that really scares me, that these type of decisions can be made by the people who are benefiting from them. And we've had another big series of that, similar to what we had in 2000 and before 2008. And the big difference is, the good news is, the banks don't have a problem. The housing market doesn't have a problem. But if you look at relative value on a long-term trend, like since the 80s, the housing market looks attractive at certain levels, but the stock market looks really unattractive. And that's what scares me. That is the sore thumb that I'm worried about.
Now, when you say the banks don't have a problem, I mean, I remain under the contention, since the banks haven't been able to really create a lot of money recently because they're not loaning any, so they're not really able to put out that artificial cash and that loan value, that they're going to start running low because their profits, although better than expected, are really not enough to really support the model that they've built. And I think that they're going to start to run into problem. Am I nuts, or am I have a point?
Well, I think you have a point. I just look at it as standpoint of Lehman going under, Bear Stearns going under. No, we don't have Countrywide Mortgage having problems, Wells Fargo, you know, basically going under, AIG basically going under. We just don't have those extremes now. And we had those develop because the housing market just mean reverted, basically. They had a lot of toxic stuff on, it was based on the housing market, and it mean reverted. So I'm more concerned that there might be some dominoes tumbling in the equity market, which might, when the tide comes out, you see who's not wearing their clothes. But we have seen some of that with this collapse in oil, so that has brought out some of the weak debt and a lot of the weak high yield stuff.
So a year from now, do you see us in deflationary problems, or do you see inflation coming back?
Well, I think deflation is still the greater risk, unfortunately. And it's not so much my opinion. Just look at the markets. The commodity market's been predicting it for 2 years. The bond market's been predicting it for more than 2 years. We have negative yields in most of the rest of the world. We don't have negative yields because they want to, because they have to. So to me, deflation is the bigger risk. Hopefully, this country will be okay, and we'll get through this. But for now, it's still, that is the greater risk, and that's part of the reason the Fed went a little dovish on us.
And there you have it, the gospel from Mr. Mike McClellan. Mike, always a great pleasure to have you on. You always bring good insight, and I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good talking to you.
This has been Mike McClellan. He is a great analyst. Again, if you've never seen him on air before, he's really straight up, and he looks like Kojak, so he's ready to go. He's always investigating and making sure he gives you the right information. Make sure that you check out BubbaTrading.com and check out our program, as Mike mentioned. Also, if you ever miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm gets you our show every day. We just surpassed 200,000. We're looking to get to 300,000. In the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Bubba Average Joe. Also, go like The Bubba Show at Facebook, and have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you tomorrow. Ray, thanks so much.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.